From KUOW in Seattle, this is Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman.
Now, our other top story tonight, the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank.
A major development in the banking world. The FDIC just reported the California regulator shut down Silicon Valley Bank.
We just learned today that California regulators have shut this lender down.
Regulators shut down America's 16th largest bank on Friday after it announced a share sale to boost its bottom line, sparking a run on withdrawals.
Friday's collapse of Silicon Valley Bank is the second largest bank failure in U.S. history, right behind Seattle's own Washington Mutual in 2008. Representative Jeff Jackson of North Carolina posted an explainer on TikTok about what exactly happened to implode SVB.
It lost a lot of money, causing a lot of its customers to get scared and try to withdraw their money, and it caused a run on the bank. So the federal government, through the FDIC, stepped in and closed the bank. Here's the problem. Typically, your deposits in a bank are only protected up to $250,000. But the vast majority of customers at this bank had deposits more than that because this bank specialized in startups and small businesses.
Citing rising interest rates, companies began withdrawing their money from the bank to keep themselves afloat, causing the bank to look around and say, whoa, we're low on operating capital. On Wednesday, SVB began taking steps to get more capital, including a massive bond sell-off at a loss of $1.8 billion. And as you heard, that caused a big old-fashioned panic. By the end of Thursday, $42 billion had been yanked out of the bank, leaving it with a negative cash balance approaching $1 billion. On Friday, the state of California stepped in to seize SVB and put it in FDIC receivership. Gary Tan of Y Combinator said CEOs with money in Silicon Valley Bank were sweating it out over the weekend, wondering if they'd be able to pay employees.
I would guess that this affects more than 1,000 startups, and about a third of those startups will not be able to make payroll in the next 30 days in the current configuration.
And lest you think this is just a Bay Area story, our friends at GeekWire estimated that between 50 to 80% of Seattle startups had money in Silicon Valley Bank. Regulators also closed New York-based Signature Bank on Sunday. So it was a fraught weekend for the startup world until the feds announced just a few hours ago, Monday morning, that depositors would be made whole, even beyond the FDIC insurance limit of $250,000. And President Biden asked everybody to just simmer down.
No losses will be, and this is an important point, no losses will be borne by the taxpayers. Let me repeat that. No losses will be borne by the taxpayers. I'm going to ask Congress and the banking regulators to strengthen the rules for banks to make it less likely this kind of bank failure would happen again.
Joining us now to help wade through what has been happening with Silicon Valley Bank and what it might mean for companies here in the Pacific Northwest is the dean of Seattle University's Albers School of Business and Economics, Joe Phillips. Hi, Dean Phillips. Thanks very much for being on Soundside today.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
I guess my first question is, how does a bank run happen in 2023?
Well, it happens in different ways. This one is very distinctive, the Silicon Valley Bank run. But basically, there's a lot of psychology involved, especially in this particular example. People get nervous about whether their money that's sitting in the bank is going to be there for them longer term, and they run to the bank one way or the other to try to get it out.
I've seen this described as maybe the first social media-driven bank run. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think social media played a role here. Again, it's a very distinctive bank in terms of how it serves the tech sector. And of course, that tech sector tends to be more social media savvy than the average person is. And just some things got out there and got some momentum, and a lot of things got said and over again. And so I think probably social media did contribute somewhat to these circumstances.
Why did SVB's heavy investment in the bond market leave the bank so exposed? When I think of bonds, I think low risk, Dean.
That's so true. Bonds are low risk if you hold them to maturity. The situation here was they bought the bonds and then the interest rates went up. And so when interest rates go up, bond prices go down. And they got themselves into a situation where people were coming to the bank to get their money out. And the assets that they had were not very liquid. They didn't have a lot of cash. So they had to go sell their bonds. And of course, they're selling the bonds at a loss from what they bought them at. And so that led to the problem. So if you look at the underlying assets, you know, they're high quality assets, but you have to hold them to maturity in a situation where interest rates have risen in order to get the face value on those investments.
It's not as though interest rates going up is a surprise, right? The Fed telegraphed that interest rates would be going up for some time. Interest rates have been rising as the Fed is trying to control inflation. Far be it for me to second guess folks who manage money at this scale, but was this a case where the bank did not look far enough ahead to what their portfolio was going to do if the Fed indeed raised interest rates? I mean, could this have been predicted?
Yeah, it is a mystery as to why the bank didn't move faster to try to address this situation, because as you said, the Fed was very clear about its intent to raise interest rates and continue to raise interest rates until inflation went down. Now, perhaps the thinking at the bank was this increase in interest rates was going to be temporary, but I don't think so. I think most people would have said, you know, this is going to be with us for a while. And, you know, the bonds that they were holding were long-term bonds, right? So it wasn't like, okay, we just have to wait till next year, then we can sell the bond at face value. So it is a mystery as to why the management of the bank got into this situation where their only alternative was to sell assets and sell them at a loss.
How about the role that the federal government may have been able to play here to head off a full-on bank collapse? Of course, Congress passed regulations after the 2008 financial crisis, known in shorthand as Dodd-Frank. The idea was to keep banks more stable. And many of those regulations, like more stress tests for banks under $250 billion in assets, were since repealed in the last few years. Now, Silicon Valley Bank CEO Greg Becker was among those lobbying for lighter rules for banks of his size. How much of a difference do you think these tighter Dodd-Frank regulations may have had in a situation like Silicon Valley Bank's?
Yeah, there's been some discussion about, you know, what regulators could have done and whether the loosening of regulations for medium-sized banks like Silicon Valley contributed to this, right? So the really large banks like JP Morgan, they haven't seen this relaxation. But for these more regional banks, things have been dialed back a little bit. I'm not sure how much this contributes to the situation, honestly, because you still have this fundamental problem of you know, deposits running out in a huge way, and then of course having to sell assets at you know, less than face value and therefore incur a loss. You know, the other thing that's interesting about Silicon Valley is the nature of the deposits, right? So it's not like your typical bank. It doesn't have a lot of mom and pop deposits with people with, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 in their checking account. You know, it's got checking accounts with millions and hundreds of thousands of dollars in it. And so the problem was when the tech sector started to get cold feet and start to worry about their deposits at the bank and they start pulling them out, it's a lot of money, right? So for example, if you look at the bank, they said on Thursday, people were trying to pull out more than $40 billion in deposits.
Wow.
For a bank that had about $200 billion in assets. I mean, that's a huge number. That's a huge wave of deposits that people are trying to get after. And I'm not sure that any regulation could have saved that. What might have happened is, you know, regulators could have noticed, hey, you know, here's a bank with a lot of big deposits. It with rising interest rates, you know, if they need to sell assets, you know, they're going to be selling these for a loss. Maybe we need to set up a facility that allows them to borrow from us. This is essentially what they've done now after the fact. Mm-hmm. They've set up a facility that allows a bank to borrow from the Fed and to post their bonds as collateral.
And that's how they're ensuring that they can, all the depositors will be able to get their money out, even in excess of
right.
The $250,000 FDIC yeah. insurance, right?
Yeah. So you post your bonds as collateral at face value, full value, right? You're not incurring a loss. Then you borrow the money from the Fed and you give that to the depositors, and then you pay it back later when things kind of stabilize. right? And it's not a problem for the Fed because they have a huge portfolio of bonds already, and they can afford to hold any bond to maturity. Whereas the bank, because of its liquidity issues, wasn't in that situation. So now they've opened up that facility, but it's too late for Silicon Valley.
Mm. How would you compare what's happening today with Silicon Valley Bank to, say, what happened to WaMu in 2008?
I'd say there's no comparison, right? Like, this is not a systemic problem. If you look at the underlying assets of this bank or any bank, whereas back in the day with WaMu, the problem was with the underlying value of a lot of the assets, the loans that they were holding, right? So I think they're very, very different situations. The other thing to remember here is what triggered this in the first place is when the Fed started increasing interest rates, you know, a lot of the tech startup companies, they had gotten their money from the venture capitalists and they put it into Silicon Valley Bank. And then as interest rates rose, the venture capitalists said, you know, you guys are on your own now.
Yeah, money got more expensive.
Well, they said, we're not going to throw more money at you. You have to make your way without more investments from us. And then they started drawing down their deposits, right? So before there was a run, there was also a drawdown of deposits that the bank didn't anticipate, right? So, you know, with startups, you're not making more money than you're spending. You're usually burning your cash, right? And so they were leaning into their accounts at Silicon Valley Bank to get that cash. And that was happening faster than Silicon Valley Bank had projected. And that's why they were forced to sell some of their assets, and they sold them for a loss. And then when that news got out, that led to the run on the bank.
Yeah. So there's this domino effect. As VC money dries up, the businesses are having to draw down savings, and then the bank realizes that it's not on stable footing with its bond portfolio. Dean, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has gone on record saying that there will not be a bailout for Silicon Valley Bank. Again, depositors will have access to their funds. What do you make of the conversation around bailing out banks today in 2023 versus what was happening in 2008?
Well, it may depend on your definition of bailout, right? Like, who is not getting bailed out here is the management of the bank, right? Because they lost their job. The shareholders are not getting bailed out because they're taking a loss. Certain lenders to the bank are not getting bailed out because they're taking a loss. Who's getting bailed out is the depositors to the bank, right? Because you could argue the Fed is taking extraordinary steps to make sure everybody gets not just their $250,000 of insured deposits, but all of their deposits. And in this case, a lot of those accounts have way more than $250,000 in them.
On Friday, there was a lot of uncertainty. People were literally showing up at physical Silicon Valley Bank branches trying to see if they could get cashier's checks in order to cover upcoming payroll expenses. Now, these are often startups that are fledgling. They are not established. They haven't diversified with bigger banks like JP Morgan. Now that we know that depositors will get their money back, do you have any fears about how Silicon Valley Bank's collapse may ripple into the startup community in the Seattle area?
You know, I really don't. Now that the regulators have decided that everybody's deposits will be made whole, regardless of whether they're under $250,000 or not, I think, you know, maybe there's some temporary bumps here, but, you know, longer term, I don't really think that this is going to be a big issue for companies.
Is there anything you want to leave listeners with in terms of what's happened here with Silicon Valley Bank, or in the future, how to insulate depositors from a big shock like this?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, like I said, it would have been great if Silicon Valley somehow had a way to go to the regulator and say, look, you know, we're going to have to sell at a loss here. And it's going to, you know, cause potential problems because, you know, our folks are different. They have really a lot. They have large deposit accounts, and things start running, it's going to run very quickly. can't we have some kind of a facility where we can borrow from you and put our assets up as collateral? That, you know, right now you can't just do that. That's saved for special circumstances like the one that happened on Friday and over the weekend. But, you know, I think that is, it just tells you that there's always the risk that a run on a bank can happen. And, you know, the thinking of regulators is that we can discipline the banks by capping deposit insurance at $250,000 so that anybody that has more than $250,000 we consider a sophisticated borrower, and they will sort of hold the bank in line, because if they get nervous, that's going to be bad for the bank. So the bank won't make the, you know, the bank has an incentive to operate prudently. But time and time again, you don't see that happen, right? And then the regulators turn around and feel like they have to sort of cave and, you know, say that all the deposits will be whole, whether they're $250,000 above or not.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, is there a point at which folks will not be paying attention to that FDIC limit anymore if they believe they're always going to be made whole?
That is a risk. That is a risk from this. You know, I'm sure the FDIC has to weigh that in the balance when they decide to play it out this way. But, you know, that is definitely a risk.
Joe Phillips is the Dean of Seattle University's Albers School of Business and Economics. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise and walking us through what you've been noticing about what's happened with Silicon Valley Bank. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. Great to be here.
So depositors are okay, but this whole debacle is raising questions. After SVB's collapse, will Congress act to head off future problems with mid-sized banks? Are those Dodd-Frank stress tests coming back? Congressman Jeff Jackson of North Carolina says members were summoned late Sunday night.
There was an emergency Zoom call with several hundred members of Congress. It was convened by the Treasury Department, and we were given about 15 minutes notice. There's going to be a huge political debate now about bank regulation and how much risk we're willing to let them take going forward. Good. Clearly, we have to make some changes. But today is about not sinking the boat that we are all in.
So they're talking. Remains to be seen if they're acting. Thanks for listening to Soundside. This show is only possible because listeners support us. If you're able to give right now, please check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.